Who had a lot to prove last night? You could say the Kings did, trying to sweep the Lakers for only the second time in franchise history. But I think we agreed yesterday, Drapes, the guy who had a lot to prove last night was Anthony Davis.
Yes, he did. He did. And you know, a lot of times you hear players, they tune out the noise. Anthony Davis was very much aware of his record against Domantas Sabonis. We had Dave McMenamin on the show yesterday, and he asked AD about it during shoot-around. So you would think, AD, knowing what he knows, yeah, let's see. You got that, Jay? Let's hear what AD, Dave McMenamin, had to say.
It doesn't matter to me. I'm all about the team. I want to get a win, obviously, just because of the fact that we're, three, something like that. We're out there in the standings, so just to be able to close that gap. So, the one-on-one thing, doesn't bother me.
So he wasn't worried about the one-on-one thing. You know, it doesn't matter. Well, Domas, sure, and Domas may say he wasn't, but boy, he looked like a man possessed last night. That's all I know.
He did, and there's a signature play from that game, the one that I think we'll all remember if you're a Kings fan, and Jay mentioned this earlier, of course,
yeah.
Is Domas with the show leading with the shoulder, scores,
yep.
And Anthony Davis goes down in a heap.
A whole heap, yes. Yeah. And then Domas, you know, as he's running back down, like, that looked like a man that was sending a message last night.
Yeah.
It wasn't just one basketball game. This was for California supremacy, big man supremacy, and Domas delivered.
I was saying that earlier that, hey, Anthony Davis needs to just get up. I know that hurts, but look, the guy just bowled you over. Get up. And Jay was saying, would have been nice if one of his teammates had come over.
Right. Helped him up. Yeah, exactly. Lakers are a flawed team right now, and Davis is flopping around and begging for a call. And, you're right about that.
So I don't know how much it means. AD says, I'm not worried about it. But as we know, Domas is now 10-0 versus Anthony Davis. He was asked about it, was Domas last night. I think it was Sean Cunningham who asked him about that in the locker room after the game. Here's what Domas had to say.
Bring attention to that. It makes my life harder, you know. So, it just, if anything, it will light a fire under him. So stop mentioning anything.
Yeah, please stop talking about that. I don't like that. You make it harder for me when you talk about that.
Nah, Domas, he's being slick right there because he knows darn well that game meant something. He knew darn well the stat. Oh, don't stop talking about it. But yet, then Domas goes out there and mops the floor with him. There was some added motivation last night. This wasn't Charlotte Hornets in December, Domas, we saw last night. And it could be because some believe that Anthony Davis stole a All-Star spot from Domantas Sabonis.
And
I feel like Domas has been taking names ever since then. He has been, and I got to look at the numbers, since the All-Star reserves were announced, he has been absolutely phenomenal.
Yeah, that's why we need, as you suggested, somebody needs to let Malik Monk know that Isaiah Hartenstein's on the Ringer's top 100 and Malik isn't.
Right.
The new top 100 that came out. You know, also, if you're Domas, and you know that you are living rent-free in Anthony Davis's head right now, right? Whatever you want. So the last thing, when you have this perfect deal set up, you don't want to talk about it. Don't talk about it. It's good, right?
Right.
So just leave it alone, because I dominate him, and I'm living inside his dome. I've been in there very comfortably for a long time now. I look forward to a long stay.
He should be paying rent. He's living there so much, right? Seriously. It's beautiful to see because, and Dave McMenamin said it yesterday, like Anthony Davis could be a top five player in this league. And Domas routinely destroys him. And that tells you where Domas, in my opinion, ranks. And somebody said it yesterday. It might have been on Twitter or on TV or something. Like, Domas might not be just All-NBA. He might be first or second team All-NBA. He might be a second team All-NBA kind of guy. Behind Joker, I think, on who's going to be first team. But this season, who's the second best center in the league? Because Embiid got hurt, so he's out of the mix. Domas could be a second team All-NBA guy.
It's either Domas or Isaiah Hartenstein.
Right. I think it's that battle, that'll be a matchup come Saturday.
Is it, what? Follow me here. What if AD got the second team and Domas got third team, and Domas is absolutely, you know, taking AD to the school all season?
The woodshed, huh? No, Jay.
And we're marching on the league offices.
Chance. Right, exactly.
You don't think so.
I'm saying we got a million-man march
okay.
going to see caucus or wherever Adam Silver is. Like, there's – if that happened –
What would happen, though?
Dude, that – I would just boycott, man. I'd be like, there's no more we can do.
Yeah.
Like, this guy mops the floor with him every time. And that shows me – Now, but who votes all NBA? That's a media thing, right?
I believe it is.
Yeah. See, so
do you get to vote?
Nah, I should. Team broadcasters, yeah. You know, you can't that's vote. Right. Yeah, but I need to get our boy. I think Chris Haynes has a vote on that, and so that would be interesting.
I know no one wants to, you know, praise the Lakers today, but AD, I know he's kind of broken down now, and he's still obviously a fine player. Man, he was good. He was a really unique player. I remember when he first played on the Olympic team.
Yes.
After he came out of college, and every so often he'd do something. It's like, whoa.
What? Why do you think? Because he's going to be a Hall of Famer. Tremendous career. It almost reminds me, to a lesser extent, it almost reminds me of Rasheed Wallace. Rasheed Wallace could have been a top 10 big man of all time. And he was very good. He was very good. Mm-hmm. But he never lived up to his full NBA potential. I don't know why that is. But Anthony Davis, he could be transcended on both ends of the floor. He has his championship, yes. He'll have a nice Hall of Fame career. But why hasn't he reached that potential, that full peak?
Perhaps because he lacks that one thing that the true greats all have, which is just that drive. You know, maybe it was. And that's
the motor.
Fine. Yeah, you can't, you know, it's when I was a kid, you're like, why doesn't that guy want to win? And then you get older, you realize people are wired differently.
Right.
And maybe he's just not wired. And he's still, as you say, he's a Hall of Famer.
Right, it's still
but
a very good
one
career.
Thing that's kept him from being like that next level. Like, I mean, he was. If any really old people are listening, they're going to get really mad. He was kind of almost Bill Russell-esque, I think, in some ways.
Yeah, yeah, a guy that can impact on both ends.
Yeah,
especially defensively. And really quickly here, I mentioned Domas's numbers since the All-Star reserves were announced. I think I got the date correct. It may be off just a little bit. But since January 25th, Kings played Golden State 25 games. Over the last 23 games, excuse me, Domantas Sabonis, 20.2 points, 15 rebounds, 9.4 assists. You know how, like, he's nearly— And his team's winning. Like, he's nearly averaging a triple-double over his last 23 games. And I think the all-star snub, he probably won't say it, but I think that has fueled him
as
well.
That's a good point. Yeah. Now I'm just hoping that our guy Jerry Reynolds isn't listening, and he listens a lot.
Yeah.
Because if I said Anthony Davis was like Bill Russell, I may hear about
it. Oh, yeah.
I'm sorry, Jerry. Yeah. Yeah. You know what I mean, though, right? When we come back, guess what? The national view of the Kings, it looks like it's shifting a little, and we'll get back to Kyle Draper's Kings culture question when we motor right back, Drive Guys on Sacktown Sport. Can you believe this? It looks like the national narrative on the Kings may be shifting. Obviously, the Kings are getting a lot of national, at least some respect today from ESPN. Really, it's just kind of a, you know, byproduct of all the talk about the Lakers. Well, it was a bad loss for the Lakers. They lost to the Kings. Kings beat them. But, oh, what does this mean for the Lakers? But obviously, there's some respect for the Kings built in there. But how about this from the Ringer? Zach Cram, I believe, is the writer. He writes, should the Kings be taken more seriously? Kings aren't as good as they were last season. This is what he says. Mm-hmm. When they took the West by surprise, 48 wins, defense still lacking. He says, yet there's a funny thing about this Kings team. They've held serve against every possible playoff opponent, with the exception of the Clippers and New Orleans, the latter of which is also in the bottom half of the playoff race. So he has a Kings record versus contenders, and we all know this. Lakers 4-0, Mavericks, Kings are 2-0, Nuggets 3-1, Thunder 2-1, Timberwolves 2-1, Warriors 2-2, Suns 2-2, Clippers 1-2, then the Pelicans 0-4. So throughout the Pelicans, and the Kings are 18-13 against those teams, even with the it's 18-9 if you throw out the Pelicans. With the Pelicans, 18-13. So what he says is, for months now, the Kings have profiled as one of the West's weakest postseason squads. Maybe it's not quite that simple.
Interesting.
End quote. Now, I was excited about this, and then Jay said, hey, this guy is one of the members of that
ringer.
Panel.
Panel. You got to dig deeper.
Yeah.
There's a backhanded compliment coming in somewhere with those guys, right?
Yeah, that panel that doesn't have a leak in the top 100.
But that, you know, raises the question, man. What is the Kings' ceiling, right? Like, they've beaten the best of the best. And we had our guy George Sedano on a few segments ago. And he said something very interesting about the Kings and perhaps making the Western Conference Finals. We'll play that a little later. But I wonder how far this Kings team can go. Because in that article you just read, he says they're not as good as last year. Well, last year they made it to Game 7 of the first round. Is that this team's ceiling this year? I think they can go deeper than that. So by my calculations, that would mean that they're a better team than last year.
Also, there's something happening right now.
Okay.
And maybe it fizzles out. But you can see it. We all saw it the last two nights. I don't know what it is. Somehow the team is playing together more. They've got the home games coming up. The defense is better. It's not great, but we see it. Keon Ellis has made a difference.
Yeah.
You can see it. The numbers say it. The players say it, right? So it's not something that we're just seeing because we wish to see it. The offense has been, the last two games, the offense has been pretty good. So it's possible that right now they're starting to play their best basketball, which is the way you want it to happen.
At this point of the season, right? Yeah, 17 games left to go. You want to be sort of hitting your stride right now. And, you know, if I'm a Kings fan, I wanted this back in day one. Because here's the thing. You were there media day. They talked about the hunger and how coming up short last year is fueling them. And then we really haven't seen it. It's like they've been sort of up and down, resting on their laurels a little bit. But, man, these last two games, they've been dialed in, fully engaged. And, you know, this is what you want. Like, and I said it 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago. The playoffs, in my mind, has already begun. They've already begun. Because seeding, I think, is so important in this year's Western Conference. Like last year, we saw the Lakers go through the play-in and make it all the way to the Western Conference Finals. I don't think a team is capable of that now. Like, I think that road is just too tough, whether you got to go through the Warriors, Lakers, Phoenix, or whatever it may be, and then try to win a seven-game series against a Minnesota, a Clippers, or a Denver. I think it's just too tough, and that's why these games are so important, because you want to make sure you're in there, one of the top six.
The Kings were so good last night that we've spent a good portion of the show talking about the game and the various stars of the game. And we have barely mentioned Keegan, and he was good last night.
Yes.
He was 19-11 with 5 threes.
Yes.
And they were so good, we've hardly even mentioned
it. And not only that, Keegan Murray played 39 minutes last night. This is a guy that missed a game with the ankle issue, and he came back, and it was one of his better games. And I mentioned this during the broadcast. The scoring, loved it, 19 points, 7 of 13, 5 threes. But he also did a heck of a job rebounding the ball. Three offensive rebounds, 11 rebounds for the game. And, you know, I wonder, and this is something we've talked about, without Kevin Huerter, does Keegan get more looks? Does Keegan get those looks that maybe Kevin Huerter would have got? I'd have to look at the tape and look at the film, but it looked like he was more present and more involved than he has been in a while.
That's the upside to having a guy like Keon Ellis in the starting lineup. And I know we all agree, maybe that would work, but it's probably not going to happen. But as we've been talking about this offense, you know, it's such a democratic offense. There aren't enough shots to go around for everybody. But if you have a guy like Keon Ellis in there, he had 8 shots last night. You know, he's like, that's great.
Right. Keon's fine. Yeah.
Yes. And that means lots of shots for everybody else.
Yeah, you're right about that. And, you know, you talked about the balance of this Kings offense. Like, Keon Ellis, and he's our guy. We understand that. But he's no doubt, in that starting five, the fifth option.
Yeah.
You know, you throw Kevin Huerter in that mix, some nights Kevin Herter's the third option. Some nights he's the, you know, and so to your point about Keon, his role, and he knows his role, is not to come out there and jack up 20 shots. It's to knock down the open threes when you get it and play great defense.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe that's something, you know, like we said, it won't happen, but I'm coming around. I'm warming up to Keon being a starter in terms of how he fits with the other group. I don't like what it would do for Kevin Huerter in his, you know, coming off the bench, because you already got your offensive sixth man. That's Malik Monk. So now you're behind Malik also, Kevin. You're the seventh man. I don't like that role for him.
Yeah, at the very least, I think long-term it's something you have to keep in mind.
Long-term. Right? Beyond this season.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Now, you asked an interesting question about the Kings culture, and you asked where we, those of us who've been around.
Oh, yes.
Before you got here, where we saw the Kings culture.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The question was, you know, I from an outsider's point of view, it seemed like, yeah, the Kings had, you know, some good players. DMC, of course, Rudy Gay. But then it just seemed like a collection of guys, you know, whether it's other teams, aging veterans, or guys you lose, i.e. Isaiah Thomas, you know, who eventually winds up in Boston. So what was the Kings culture back then?
Here's a couple of answers, and I'd love to know what Jay thinks. Curtis Hicks says, I'd say the closest we had to a core was when Malone was our coach, which was at Rudy Gay and Cousins and IT, but they just couldn't keep on the floor at the same time. Jack says, I thought they'd made some noise when they hired George Karl and had Gay, Cousins, and Rondo. That team had potential to have a great offense, but too many me-first players that played no defense. How do you answer that question, Jay? What was the Kings' culture before the Kyle Draper era?
I would say we didn't have one. I think there were many times and opportunities, and just where you sit right there, Drapes, assistant coach Doug Christie on numerous days was asking, like, we don't know, you know, the culture. We don't know the makeup of this team, and I think – with the changing of the guards, the head coaching from, you know, Carl, Jaeger, Luke, you know, in betweens, there was the smarts. I mean, there were so many different Reggie Theas. There were so many different regimes. I felt over the 15 years there really never was one. But I do agree that was the closest. I just thought, and it's no disrespect to George Carl, I thought he was the missing – that was the piece that couldn't put the culture together. I thought Rondo, the ITs, the DMCs, as we played Alphabet Boys and Rudy Gay, I thought they were close. And as I think it was Curtis, they weren't healthy enough altogether. But I thought you needed a leader, you know, as a head coach in that clubhouse. Excuse me, not the clubhouse, but inside the locker room.
Yeah.
The teams with successful culture, be it the Warriors or the Spurs or the Patriots or the old Bill Walsh 49ers, it's everybody pulling together for the same goal. It's like, what are we doing? Yeah. You know, I may not like you that much, but we're together on this. This is what we're doing. And for the Kings, for years, it was we'd start to go one way, or they would, and then there'd be one guy's like, nah, I don't like that guy. I'm not on board with this. Or the owner didn't like the coach. Or the coach didn't like the star.
Yeah.
Or –
how did George Karl work out? Yeah.
He was trying to trade Cousins. You know that whole story?
No.
Like, he thought they'd be better off without Cousins, and I guess he wanted to trade Cousins and ownership. No, we're not going to trade Cousins. And George, like, went and tried to work out a deal with the Lakers anyway. And at that point, that was done.
That is just. You know, can't have a – like, the culture was a culture of dysfunction, it sounds like. Right?
Yes.
Right.
Okay. Yeah, that's a great way to put it.
Yeah.
You know, to this point – I thought, and, you know, Whitey, please speak on this, and Drapes from the outside looking in. I know you're asking the question.
Yeah.
I thought a lot of the blame was placed on DeMarcus of not having a culture. And it was, you know, well, the Kings go as DeMarcus goes. And it was kind of like, you know, one of the things I thought DeMarcus carried on his shoulders for many years, which I think was completely wrong, was he was the one that was kind of manipulating. He was the puppet master. He was the manipulator in the locker room, you know, even to the point of like media, you know, and don't get me wrong. He went out of a few people in the media because of personal things. But I felt like he had that shoulder, you know, that weight shoulder on him. And I just never thought it was 100% on him. I just think the whole kit and caboodle, the whole ball, it was dysfunction. And I think you're spot on, Drapes. What do you think, Whitey, on that?
I think DeMarcus was a guy they looked at to be a foundational piece, and I don't think he was, as a basketball centerpiece, stable enough to be that. So, like, you're building on a foundation that's already shaky, and then, like, oh, well, it's his fault. Well, he could never – I don't think he was in position to be that. And, you know, they tried to build on him and then Tyreek, remember? It's like, Tyreek, you got a lot of talent there.
Yeah.
You had a ton of talent, but they didn't get along, so – they would try to lay down the foundation, and then it would be a foundation that wasn't very solid, and then you couldn't build on it. And it would take them, you know, 3 years to figure that out, that, oh, well, that's not going to work. And then you're starting over.
And then you're set. And that's the thing. It's like, you know, we talk about heat culture. The reason why heat culture has, quote unquote, worked is because they have not wavered from it. They haven't changed the coach. They haven't. Pat Riley hasn't left. Like, they've been stable. And no, guys, this is it. This is who we're going to be. This is our coach. And you look at the Kings and what was it, 8, 9 coaches or whatever since Adelman before Mike Brown came on. Mm-hmm. And so it's hard to build a culture when you're changing it every 2 years.
That's why those who've said, understand frustration, but, yeah, you know, the last few weeks, people say, oh, Mike Brown, get rid of Mike Brown. That's a joke. And it would do so much damage,
yes,
to this program, if I may use that term, for a pro sports team.
And if you fire or get rid of Mike Brown, Mike Brown is one of the most respected coaches
you'd
in the NBA.
You'd be a joke. Your franchise is a joke if you did that.
Exactly. And how many people have we had come on our show, national guys, guys from other markets, say, Mike, you guys got a good one in Mike Brown. Right. You know, and so, no, we're not changing the coach. I just think it's going to take some time to build that culture. And also, I might add, sometimes you got to shake up the roster and bring in the guys who fit the culture that you want to be as well. And so I think this is a process for the Sacramento Kings. This is a journey that they're on right now.
You know, the other part to that, and I think you're speaking to it, you're kind of almost scratching the surface and digging a little deeper, Drapes and Whitey, is when all you know is dysfunction and something goes wrong, what do we normally do? We revert to bad habits. Mm, we revert, yeah, to what we know. And I think that's where some of the Kings fans are fighting internally of the, like, listen, oh my goodness, they lost 3 in a row and they lost 2 to the Rockets, or they lost, you know, a bad game. And then it's like, oh no, throw our hands in the air. Let's get back dysfunctional. And I think that's what you guys are here for. And, you know, the half glass full of fans where it's like, listen, steady. Let's just ride it out.
Right.
This isn't dysfunctional anymore.
Right. Right.
Like, you know, learn the difference between dysfunction and just a slump,
or
a bad game, or a bad night. Yep. And so I think you guys do a great job of that.
That's a great way to put it. Thanks. When we come back, we're going to talk to Rick Kamla, NBA TV and radio host. You know, he's a host of Give and Go on Sirius XM. You know, he says he invented fantasy basketball. Did you know
Oh,
that?
My gosh. Him and Al Gore, huh?
Right?
I'm going to ask him about
his,
that.
His national view on the Kings. Rick Kamla coming up here with the Drive Guys on Sac Talk. Our next guest is, he's nationally known. He has hosts a show on Sirius XM, hosts a Give and Go show, which I know you listen to. I listen,
yes,
to the show sometimes. And he's done a lot of TV, a lot of national TV, NBA TV. He has here in his Twitter bio, and I just happen to mention this, and Kyle kind of latched onto this. So before we bring him on, I want to be clear on what this says. Rick Kamla, at Rick Kamla Sports on X, TV radio host, invented fantasy basketball in 1989. So you're skeptical of that?
I'm a little skeptical. I need Rick to explain himself on this.
All right.
I need to hear the timeline here. And I don't know if he's right or wrong. I can't prove it, but I'm a little skeptical.
Here he is, the one and only Rick Kamla. How are you today, Rick?
Fellas, what's going on?
We're glad to have you on today. You know, we got so much going on with the Kings. It's funny, we were just, as I was bringing you on, you know, looking at your ex-bio, and you have on there that you invented fantasy basketball, and Kyle Draper is like, whoa, hold on, I'm not going to need some clarification there.
I need some facts here. I need some proof. I need the receipts, Rick. How'd you invent fantasy basketball? Talk to me.
So I'll try to make this story as short as possible. It is a long story. So 1986, I played fantasy baseball. My first introduction to fantasy, I didn't know about anything else yet. And so I just did a one-off, right? And then I get to college, I join a frat, Sigma Nu fraternity. And so I just had this idea, hey, I'm around a bunch of guys, sports fans, like, let's put a league together here, right? And it was my third year in college. So I started a football league, right? And then I got the idea to start a basketball league. Now, the football league had already been done. Baseball had already been done. Basketball had not already been done. I have the first documented fantasy-based basketball league, 1989, Sigma Nu Fraternity, University of Minnesota. And my first pick was Magic Johnson. I set up a rule where you got extra bonuses for triple doubles. I made everybody aware of this rule. They did not act on it. I did. I won the league. I took all of their money, okay? And so a fantasy beast was born. And so then, guys, I got into fantasy football, right? That led to fantasy football writing with fanball.com. And then they branched out to other sports. I was their top basketball guy. Boom, NBA TV discovers me. Boom, I get the fantasy show. So, Kyle, not only did I invent fantasy basketball, but I popularized it as well.
And turned it into a career. How about that?
Yeah.
That's impressive. Hey, I'm not one to challenge you, Rick. That sounds like a very plausible, believable story. And so I'm going to let you ride with that one.
Hey, I wanted to ask you about your poll you had on X. I didn't see the final results. You had a poll there as to whether Trayce Jackson-Davis actually dunked on Wemby or not. Like every other show, we talked about that too. I guess you had a dispute with somebody over that. What was the results, final results of that poll?
Okay, so it was funny. It was Aminil Hapson, and I know you guys are very aware of him and his work. You may even be good friends with him.
Yep.
And I love working with Amin. And so we, in a friendly way, butted heads the other day. Because I just very simply called the Trayce Jackson-Davis dunk or slam or however we're defining it on Wemby the other night as a dunk. And I just didn't really, you know, I was busy prep mode and stuff. I guess I didn't know a whole debate had popped up. So he says, hey, Cam, you know, the one thing I want to kind of nitpick on is that wasn't a dunk. And so Amin called it an aggressive floater, which is hilarious. Absolutely hilarious. And so I'm like, he's like, yo, you got to grab the rim for it to be a dunk. I'm like, no, you don't. Officially, it is a dunk in the box score. You go to the play-by-play on ESPN.com, and it says dunk, okay? Most literary outlets in the country, you know, media outlets, are calling it a dunk, not a slam or a throw-in or whatever the case may be. And maybe we're all just being lazy throwing around this term dunk that we've taken for granted for so long. So the results are 52% not a dunk.
Wow.
48% a dunk.
Wow.
So I'm shocked that it's even that close of a debate. I thought it was a dunk. Well, how did you guys do it?
I see why some people could say it wasn't a dunk. But like you say, you just got to go to the play-by-play, the box score, whatever it is. It says a dunk. And it sort of reminds me about Blake Griffin's dunk on Kendrick Perkins. Remember 10 years ago and whatever it was, 2012, they said it was, you know, oh, well, was it a dunk? Yes, it was a dunk in my opinion.
That's why I asked you. I can't believe I'm with you. I can't believe anybody, unless they're trolling you, would even vote it's not a dunk. That's stunning. Stunning.
He literally was willing to die on that hill that it was not a dunk. Okay, so there is that whole portion of our audience over there, too.
Rick, let me ask you this. Rick Kamla joining us here on the Drive Guys, Sactown Sports 1140. Did you do your radio show today, Rick? I didn't get a chance to listen today. Were you on air today?
Yes, me and Antonio Daniels, the great Antonio Daniels, were on rocking it from 2 to 4 Eastern.
Did you guys talk about what's wrong with the Lakers, or did you give my Sacramento Kings some props? You're a national guy, Rick, so I look to you to set the record straight nationally about my Kings.
Okay, and I appreciate that. We talk about the Kings when appropriate, and I feel like, Kyle, I'll let you know, man. You know, we shepherd 3 hours of real estate a day, right? Mm-hmm. And we are not tilted towards, you know, the big glitzy teams. When they're hot and it's the story, we go there. And when Cleveland's the story, we go there. And when Sac is the story, we go there. And so we try to just really be diverse with that. So Sac gets a lot of love from Give and Go. Now, what we talked about today was a merged topic with the – so it was like the question was, is it more of a great look for Sabonis or more of a bad look for Davis that Sabonis is 10-0 against him, right? Mm-hmm. Okay, so we merged it. We went down branches of Sac. We went down branches of L.A. So it really was a 50-50 deal. And I said, it's more of a bad look for Davis. And what he said before the game about how it's not about one-on-one, it's about team, and I'm not really bothered by it. Dang it, I'd be really bothered if one dude, you know, just had my number, right? Yeah. And I'm a top 75 guy, and he is not. And by the way, guys, I will sort of preach to the masses here, and I know you guys are going to buy what I'm selling here. I still am pissed off about Domantas Sabonis not being on the All-Star team, and I'm not even invested. Like, I'm not even invested, guys. Paul George over Domantas Sabonis is one of the great injustices in basketball history. This guy's having a one-of-one season.
Let me ask you this, Rick Camlin. We appreciate your time very much, and we appreciate the time of all our guests. But typically when we have a national NBA guest on, I will ask them this question. And again, appreciate their time, but a lot of times I get kind of a hemming and a hawing and, oh, that's a good question. But my question is, why do you think, just your opinion, just interested in your opinion, why do you think Domas doesn't get more national recognition? I know you talk a lot about this MVP race. The numbers suggest he should be a candidate in the MVP race. Why doesn't he get more recognition, in your opinion?
It is a great question, and I'll give you an answer. And it's not that he's an international player, okay? Jokic gets all the shine he needs. Giannis gets all the shine he needs. It's about the market, okay? It's about being on the West Coast of the United States, and you guys understand East Coast bias. I'm sure it comes up every single day on your shows, that people go to bed in the East, and they're not up watching Sabonis beast mode Anthony freaking Davis, okay? And bull through him like a rhino last night, and he gets up and he's shaking his chin like, what just hit me, right? That's the Domas experience. I'm a night owl, and I'm a super sicko hoophead, so I'm up watching Drapes and Katie Christensen until the wee hours, okay? So I understand. Now, like, has he popped into, like, the top five of MVP? No, he has not. To me, there's a clear-cut top five. But when you start going to number six, number seven, number eight, and then that second bracket, right, it's Brunson, it's Ant-Man, it's Sabonis, it's maybe like a Halliburton. And you guys know the big five. It's Jokic and Sabonis at the top. Then it's a blend of Luka, Giannis, and Tatum. And then you get the rest. And so it's no slight to Sabonis, like, I am completely unbiased with the thing, right? Completely even, Steven. And that's why I have Sabonis. You know what I'm saying? So I don't feel like I'm sleeping on Sabonis. I feel like that's where he lives in the second tier of the MVP conversation.
Rick, you know, and I've said this, and we pretty much agree with it here on Sactown Sports 1140. If Domas was doing what he's doing but wearing a Knicks jersey, Stephen A. would be talking about it every day, ESPN, NBA Today. Same thing if he wore the laundry of the Los Angeles Lakers. We all know that. Is that an issue in the league, you think, that, you know, the star teams get too much shine, and whereas, you know, some of these smaller franchises, Sacramento, let's say, Indiana, you know, Orlando, for instance, what they're doing this year is a great story. Should there be more balanced coverage around the NBA?
Yes, there should. But, Kyle, we are fighting an uphill battle that we will never win, okay? Kyle, I come from Minnesota, all right? Yeah. I empathize with your plight and your audience's plight right now. I worked in Atlanta for 7 years covering that market that felt extremely slept on in a variety of ways, right? I've also worked in the New York market for a long time, and I understand that the New York market drives all of this. The LA market drives the West Coast. So it's always going to gravitate towards those teams and those areas. And it even bleeds over to Boston and Philly in terms of that whole Northeast thing. They just get more shine than anybody else. And that's just how it's been, it's how it is, and it's how it's going to be. Kyle and Kevin, it is on us national broadcasters to continue singing the songs of the Indianas and of the Minnesotas and of the Sacramentos. Again, when warranted, we're not going to try to shoehorn a story in that's not valid on a national radio platform, but just know that day to day, we are looking to for all of the opportunities we can to get into those conversations.
Rick Camlin with us here, Drive Guys, Sactown Sports. I really appreciate your forthright answer. And, you know, you went to market size, and I guess some people are afraid they're going to offend us, but we understand that. As far as Domas goes, I have another theory as to why he's overlooked, and I agree with everything you said. If you look at Basketball Reference Top 10, the MVP award tracker, of the 10 they have listed, Domas has the lowest points per game average. And I think that we as basketball fans at large, when you're looking at who's the MVP, people go right away, they gravitate to, well, who's scoring the most points? And I think that's another reason Domas gets overlooked. He's not a big-time scorer. Would you agree with that?
I 1,000% agree with that. And I will take it a step farther. Bam Adebayo is victim of this in Miami. Bam Adebayo doesn't block shots. I mean, he blocks about one a game, right? Well, when we think defensive player of the year, We think Dikembe Mutombo. We think Alonzo Mourning. We think Hakeem Olajuwon. These guys were swatting four a game. That's what I came up with. And so I do gravitate towards the block category with DPOY. It's not the end-all, be-all. But when you're blocking one a game, and Wemby's blocking 3.5 a game, good luck, okay? And so if Sabonis is averaging 20 or 19.8 or whatever that is, and he's having a one-of-one season, only 20, 12, and 8 with 60% that we've ever seen, okay? And I'm very, very impressed by that. But he's at 20, and Luka's at 34, and Giannis is at 31, and SGA is at 31. And we're banging on Tatum because he's only at 27, down from 30 because of all the guys that they brought in. You get the sarcasm there. But Sabonis at 20, that is definitely an issue for him.
Rick Kamla joining us here on Sactown Sports 1140. The Drive, guys. Rick, where do you see the Kings in the Western Conference? And, you know, the thing I like about you is you're a straight shooter. You're not going to pander to the listeners right now. You're going to call it like you really see it. Where do you see the Kings in the West?
I should have a higher perception of them. Guys, the Kings have not built on last year. I've been disappointed. They have not. The Herder thing has gone sideways. The Davion Mitchell thing has gone sideways. To me, the Harrison Barnes thing has gone sideways. All the trade rumors that started very early in the season. And, you know, I like Keon Ellis. And he had a terrific game, you know, guarding LeBron. And I really like it. I don't want to make it sound like he shouldn't be in the rotation or anything like that. I'm totally here for that. But it's just gone so sideways with three very important guys. And I don't think that's a good look. And I don't think it's been to the benefit of the team. I don't feel – last year I felt the swell, the pop, the upside, the arrows pointing up. This year I don't feel that. I feel like you guys are kind of toggling here. You struggle against – it's like they're a fair-weather team. When they're playing kind of an also-ran or a team that's missing a star or not a great team – and you guys know this. They just don't bring it, okay? And when you get them against the really, really good teams like Milwaukee the other night, you know, they're never going to sleep on a Laker matchup. They bring it, okay? And they pull off wins that were like, wow, look at Sac. And then lose some games. You're like, what in the hell are you guys doing here? Think about New Orleans. They don't mess around. And they don't win, like, the close games against the good teams. But at least they handle their business when they should. They're drilling these bad teams by 25, right? Sac's got to get that edge. They've got to go into every game. We got to just destroy this team and end it by late third quarter, but they don't have that. And so I don't trust Sac. I don't. You guys are dangerous. Dang. I love Domas. I love Fox. But I don't see a long playoff run here.
I understand what you're saying, Rick. I would suggest, because we don't know, it's been an up and down season. The last couple of games, it looks like maybe they've gained some traction a little bit defensively. And look, just keep an eye on them. I understand what you're saying, but the last couple of games, it's looked like, all right, they might, I don't want to say have turned a corner, but just keep an eye on that, because some of those things you addressed, there's reason to believe that they might finally be dealing with those things.
I hope you're right.
Yeah.
I hope you're right. I love the Sac story. I love breaking the playoff drought last year. Mike Brown, unanimous coach of the year. Like I said, I like a lot of your players. I'm a huge Keegan Murray fan. Okay. When last night it was on, right? He had a bunch of field goals, you know, Keegan Murray. I think that's awesome. I geek out when I hear that, man. So I'm into the Sac thing, man, but I got to shoot you straight. And that's how
absolutely.
I view the team.
Yeah. Which NBA team has surprised you the most this year, for better or for worse?
Minnesota, because I mean, top of the West. And here's the thing, like OKC, yes, it's very surprising that they're up there too. But, guys, I lived the Minnesota experience. I lived passing on Steph twice, the Joe Smith fiasco, all the bad draft picks, all of the failures. I lived it, okay? And so I thought that the Wolves were not going to escape their history, that the Gobert thing was just going to be a disaster, because that's just how the Wolves operate. So I am surprised that Chris Finch has pushed all the right buttons and found, you know, the fit for Kat and Gobert. We all expected Ant-Man to continue to make an ascent and be this badass that he is, right? Now, that's surprising nobody. The fit with Gobert, being number one in defense, historically good on the defensive end, being one or two in the West basically all year, okay? Very, very surprising to me, because OKC didn't have that, like, drag on them of me and my emotional history with the Timberwolves, right? So I'm looking at OKC, yeah, you have no playoff experience, blah, blah, blah. But I really love your starting five, and I don't think that you guys are just – historically career choke artists like the Minnesota Timberwolves are. So I thought that they had a little bit more upside than that. But I would say Minnesota's been the most surprising team for me.
Would you be surprised if both the Lakers and the Warriors don't finish in the top eight, actually in the playoffs? Could they both be bouncing? And how shocking would that be to you?
I would be surprised if neither of them were there. If both of them missed the playoffs, I'd be very surprised, maybe shocked. I would not be shocked if only one of them made. I mean, they're coming out of the 9-10 hole, right? And we all kind of like, you know, I don't know. I mean, they rested Draymond the other night. Obviously, Steph had a little bit of an injury. Like, I mean, are we really even going for it to try to get to seven right. or eight? The Lakers seem to be playing with their food in that regard as well. It's almost like both of those teams think, yo, we got this. We just need to get in a one-and-done scenario. The problem is they're going to be playing each other. One of those dudes is going home after the 9-10 game.
Man, that's unbelievable. Rick Kamler joining us. Rick, you're a Minnesota guy. You went to University. Are you born in Minnesota, too?
Yes.
What part? Where at?
Edina. You guys know where Edina is?
I do. You ever heard of a small school called Winona State University?
Oh, yeah.
That's
sure.
where I graduated from. I'm a Winona State Warriors.
Are you serious?
First job in TV was in La Crosse, Wisconsin, right across the river there.
Gosh.
Oh, yeah.
You've got to be kidding me.
Small
that
world,
so
man.
That is so cool, man. That is so cool. I love to hear that.
We're out there representing, Rick. Appreciate you, man.
Wait, now, where were you born? Were you born in Winona?
No, I'm from Philadelphia, though. That's the thing. I'm from Philly. Long story, Rick. I met a girl, and there you go. And that's the end of my life right there. I met a girl. And she said, come out to Minnesota. I had no idea what I was getting myself into, man.
Oh, man, I love it. I mean, I tell you what, I'm in Florida right now, guys, and I'm not bragging. I mean, you guys are in California, yeah. Okay? But I'm in Florida right now. I am so blessed to be down here. I 30-plus years in Minnesota, then went to Colorado, back to Minnesota, then to New York, New Jersey, then to Atlanta, then to Houston, then to Florida. So I've been blessed. I've had gigs, and we've traveled, and we've done some stuff, but I am so done with the cold. I'm retired. I can't go back. Like, my hands are literally going to freeze and just crack and disintegrate, and I'm going to have stumps if I have to live in that weather again.
Rick, we very much appreciate it. A lot of fun. Thanks. We hope to talk to you again soon, sir.
Hey, you guys have a good one. Good luck to your Kings.
All right, thanks, Rick.
Rick Kamla from XM Sirius NBA Radio. NBA TV, and I guess he did invent fantasy basketball.
Like, he had a long story. It wasn't like just, you know, one week and me and the guys were hanging out. Like, he detailed exactly what happened. He remembers his first draft, taking Magic. He said, when, 89?
He said 89.
All right, okay, that's still, Magic was still
right,
Magic
right,
back then. So
right.
His story is checking out.
How about this? So my dad used to work at the Vallejo Times-Herald, and he would, before he'd go to work, he would say, all right, you pick three players and I'll pick three players, NBA players. And then he'd bring home the box scores that night, and then we would see who had the most points. And I was like 10 years old.
Really?
So, yeah.
Oh, so maybe you guys.
Did my dad invent fantasy basketball?
Dude, just throw it on your ex bio. You know, who's going to dispute that other than Rick Kamla?
My dad. Yeah. My dad invented fantasy basketball. Does the NBA need to do something about scoring? You know what? It turns out they already have.
Yes.
Scoop is next with the Drive Guys on Sacktown Sports.